comes up for you. There you go.
That was a really great presentation. That was really a great way to describe. That was talking about sort of the large scale partnerships that we need to get the homeless community into primary care services. I'm going to be talking a little bit more about a small scale partnership that we worked on in Houston, Texas. This is the name of a student-run clinic called HOMES, Houston Outreach Medicine, Education, and Social Services. It's kind of a mouthful, so we shortened it, HOMES. I was a director, student director last year. We also have the director from the year before in the audience from the UT School of Public Health. Which button am I pushing, by the way? Works for me. Okay. But nobody involved has any personal financial relationships. I did want to brag that we are funded by Healthcare for the Homeless Grant through HHH and also the AAMC Caring for Communities Grant and a Lone Star Grant from the Houston Endowment, but I haven't seen a dime of it, so there's nothing to declare. The HOMES clinic itself, I want to talk a little bit about the specifics and what public health does in the clinic and how that evolved, and then I want to go into sort of the public health principles that helped guide the development of the relationship between us, the medical schools, and as you see right there, there's actually two medical schools, Baylor and UT Houston, about a block and a half away from each other in Houston, which makes for some interesting dynamics. And both of those were involved in the clinic, as well as the UH School of Pharmacy, the UT School of Public Health, and the just last year in the spring, we got the UH School of Social Work involved too, doing back-end referral work because that was taking up an exorbitant amount of time, and they're much better at it than anybody else. The idea, of course, is to get free and high-quality care for patients and then an exceptional experience for the students involved, both the medical students and the and the public health and everybody else that could come. I'm going to focus on that, though. It's quality care. You know, the issue of access is important to all of us here, I think, and of interest to me, but we don't really focus on getting as many patients as possible through the door at HOMES. We're only open, actually, one day a week when everything else in the entire city is closed. We're the only clinic open each Sunday, and we only see between 8 and 12 patients usually a day, but and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. We try to do as much for them as we can each time that we see one. It is entirely student-run. The students are on the medical teams, make up the medical teams. The managers are students, the student board of directors I mentioned before. And the grant writing and reporting is all done and supervised by the students as well. That was part of the role I was in on the board while I was there. Each medical team is made up of four students. A third-year medical student, that should say either a first or second-year medical student, two of those, and then either a pharmacy or a public health student. We used to be one each, and just the demand from first-year medical students kind of expanded their role on the team. And then also in managing the clinic, we can have medical students or public health students involved. And that's a big way that we get involved is training each other and training the medical students to manage in the clinic. Each patient gets seen for an average of an hour and a half each by a medical team. When you think about, like, I still get a, love that part about the clinic is, I don't see my provider for an hour and a half when I go, and I don't think anybody else does either. We try and do, the most extensive history collection I've ever seen in an actual encounter, and that's partly because the students are practicing and they have their teaching moments, and we need to step out, consult with with one of the preceptors, and then come back in to determine treatment. But it's the point is not, like I said, to get as many people through. It's to get the best experience for the students and the best experience for each patient we do bring in, so that people aren't being shuffled through in the way that it happens in the ER, which incidentally is where I work now. So we try to get each team to see at least two patients each day. Sometimes there's only one if it's a really complicated case, and it's kind of the interesting thing about the clinic. The rest of the week, though, it's called Cathedral Clinic. It's not called HOMES. And it's run by Healthcare for the Homeless Houston. Dr. Buck is the president and one of the heads of the family practice program at Baylor College of Medicine. They provide lots of services, primary care, obviously. Case management is on site every day. There's a free pharmacy there, which I can't tell you how helpful that is. The more I go to other clinics and see other programs, I realize just how lucky we were to have some of the facilities we had. Having a pharmacy there on site, it doesn't have to have everything, but if you have the basics, it can go a really long way. And we were lucky enough that some of the grants and some of the private funding for HHH was able to support the pharmacy and make those available. We also had laboratory referral available, which was really interesting. We started doing STI screenings and other things there on site, which was a good opportunity. And then another thing I like to talk about is that they also have integrated primary and psych visits available one day a week. There's a psychiatrist and a physician that will meet with a patient two-on-one, actually, and have, you know, sort of merged care, basically, talking about the interaction between health and mental health happens there. We're located within the Dunn Center and the Beacon, which is the Beacon is a day shelter which has some incredible services. I always forget everything they had, so I went ahead and wrote it down. They have, you know, restrooms, laundry, showers, clothing donations, food. It's a safe place to go. The interesting thing is because of the showers, if somebody has, you know, and laundry too, they give them scrubs, and so there'll be people wandering around in pink scrubs all over the place around our clinic, which is an interesting sort of situation. The day, and again, we're just going through some of the specifics to this. The public health students lead an orientation, tell all of the other students what to expect. We sit in a big circle. Somebody strikes up kumbaya every once in a while. And then we go over to the Beacon, and the outreach part of it is that we go out. We don't wait for patients to come in. We can do walk-in, but we go out and we just walk up and down the line of people waiting to get into the day shelter and say, does anybody need to go to a clinic? You get some really interesting questions when you ask that, by the way. And then we try and triage. If we can see them in the clinic, we tell them when to come by. We see two rounds, and then we have a period at the end called reflection, and that's angled towards the students and creating positive attitudes about family practice, particularly in medical school students who tend to have lower attitudes at the end of their school than they did at the beginning, which is a concern and a big part of why the clinic was started. We talk about what, you know, kind of difficulties were seen, what kind of issues came up, when, why people were frustrated, that kind of thing, and then we talk out why those things can be handled and dealt with. Some of the stuff about the public health students, we are smaller in attendance than others, but we volunteer more often. So those of us that go a lot and get really comfortable in the clinic. We end up managing and become sort of these senior managers. Once you've been there long enough, the preceptors let you get away with a lot of stuff they wouldn't let you do normally. There's a variety of specializations, and I need to emphasize that because it's one of the most interesting things about bringing public health into a clinic is none of us know what public, you know, you can't say what public health is in one sentence, and so we end up, you know, we have EMTs, doctors, community health educators, psych techs, substance abuse counselors, global health students, infection control practitioners, infectious disease students, and everybody comes at it in a different way, and that's really one of the most fascinating things. Health promotion specialists, of course, you know, health educators, just all kinds of different perspectives and attitudes, and everybody comes at it a different way, and they all learn to handle the patient their own way and interact in a way that's best for them. And a lot of public health people go into healthcare, though. And so one of the things we had to struggle with was explaining to people why public health needs experience training in a clinic. But, I mean, a lot of graduates end up going into clinics and healthcare environments. And it was, for some reason, we couldn't seem to explain to some people why public health needed the exposure to the medical encounter when, you know, a lot of people just assume that all we do, of course, is population data and policy development and those things, which is, it's not the case when it comes down to the rubber on the road. Let's see. So the question, of course, is what do we do? That's what I was just talking about. Quite specifically, we spend a lot of time on the social history form because that's what we like, and so we always grab that out of the chart before anybody else gets it. Spend an intense effort identifying the social, the behavioral, economic determinants to health that usually don't get identified, and so these things really tend to broaden the discussion that's going on. It turns into more of a conversation than a medical interview, yes and no answers and that kind of thing. And then we're able to address those issues beyond the medical model for the things that are related to medical outcomes. I mean, it is a healthcare clinic. And try and, you know, involve motivational interview techniques and things like that to really get the patient invested in what we're talking about. We do the drug and sexual histories most of the time because those get skipped. Try and do what we're calling now health literacy promotion, and that's because the Community Advisory Board didn't like health education because nobody wants to be lectured to. But we can promote health literacy and educate the patients about their diseases in a way that raises their level of knowledge without us lecturing to anybody. And that's been pretty well accepted. We were up until last spring in charge of the referral network as well, although social work tends to handle that now. I'm going to skip through some of this. I feel like I'm going too slow. When we get involved in management, we do, like I said, lead the orientation. That usually involves prepping the students for what they're going to see. The first-year medical students a lot of times have had even less experience than a manager has in a clinic at that point. They don't get a lot of chances to volunteer because of the high demand. And so we end up preparing a lot of medical students for it, which is interesting. We go over and then we do the outreach and at the same time that the managers are going around and signing up patients, like I was describing before, actually, this is a great part. All of the medical students are just told to go into the beacon. Everybody's waiting for their lunch. They just go and they sit down. And you see some really interesting pushback from some people, but for the most part, it's usually a really good experience. We just tell them, yeah, go talk to somebody. Go find somebody, meet somebody, ask them how their day is. Start with sports, you know, that usually works, like just whatever. And then they end up sitting down while we go around and sign up patients. Everybody else is getting to know somebody who's in that situation, which I think is just a fantastic opportunity. And then just sort of managing the day throughout the day, doing all of the lab orders and other things, so we get to see how the process of medical care is encountered, which I think is really important for public health students to get to see, because a lot of times that doesn't work. That doesn't really get translated into the academics. We also get to do blood pressure and glucose screenings, which I think is really important. We have to do this in the first round, of course, because if somebody comes out positive, you have to see them in the second round. You can't just, by the way, you have high blood pressure. Good luck with that. And then as I came from inpatient psych, actually, into public health, and so not personally. I mean, I was working in it. One of my favorite parts is this reflection period at the end, it's basically group therapy for a bunch of healthcare providers, and it's fantastic. They resist it, of course, like everybody does. You know, when you work with adolescents, it's kind of similar. And they laugh and joke and whatever, but then you end up getting some really incredible statements by the end of the reflection period, people who actually were really pissed off about something, and that's why they were trying to be cute, you know, end up opening up about how much it means to them when somebody, you know, calls them doctor because of the white coat they're wearing, or, you know, when they get asked a question they have no idea how to answer just because they're wearing that white coat. You know, that really shocks them a lot of times. This is a big experience for a lot of the first years. We also have a one-day training seminar before the class that we've made available recently, and this is just a list of the topics so that you know what it is that we're trying to prepare the public health students to be at least somewhat familiar with before they get into the clinic. And it's, you know, I mean, all of these sort of fit into a medical paradigm, but each of them also are uniquely public health oriented, and that's what I kind of am trying to make the point of in this talk is that each of these things are both uniquely public health in the way that we can specialize more so than other fields, but also just critically important to homeless healthcare and frequently left out of the usual medical encounter. So what we do essentially is public health tends to be just the fringe of the medical encounter in this clinic, and it's a really interesting thing that's developed sort of naturally based on the needs of our patients. Health behavior, education, chronic illness management doesn't get talked about nearly enough. Collecting a thorough history goes a really long way because you make connections that don't come up if you just ask how many packs, how often, how long, when did you quit? Like, that doesn't cover anything. And the mental health issue, of course, just everybody needs to be prepared for more than anything else, although, again, it's one of my favorite issues in the field. Going over interview technique, which I don't think gets covered often enough for in the medical encounter, and then going over resources so that the students know where they're going to be sending these patients and what's available, really, because you can't promise anything if it's not going to happen. And I just have to say, beyond a population health perspective, I just wanted to discuss some of the principles of public health in the context of the work we do, to outline how this relationship has been developed and really how we've justified the relationship down the road. Actually, is a lot of how this has happened. These guidelines, I think most people have seen these slides before as far as the comparison of public health and medicine. What I did do, those, I highlighted some of the stuff, and there's a lot on the first slide that I think stands out to me. Obviously, there's a focus on the population, but I don't think that means you can't do patient care. And I think public health has to sometimes be a one-on-one experience. It can't always be data-oriented. And so what we try and do is keep that population perspective while doing patient care and teaching that to the students. Obviously, it's tempered. It's a public service ethic as opposed to personal service in medicine, but it's tempered, and I like that that's even in there. I didn't add that, tempered by concerns for the individual, and that's what we're doing. And then emphasis on prevention, health promotion, for the whole community. That's exactly what we've been talking about during this conference. Those are the things that are missing, and that's public health role, is to be right there and filling those spots where they need to be. The whole community in this case I see is referring to the vulnerable population, the unhoused, the uninsured, the unnoticed, the underserved that come into the clinic. And so when we do health promotion for the whole community, that means everybody that's in that situation, I think. And then again, a broad spectrum of interventions. That's the other thing that just keeps coming up is, we have to be talking about the environment, the human behavior, the lifestyle issues, as well as the medical care. And that really gets left out of the conversation if you're just seeing a provider for 5 minutes and getting an antibiotic. And there's just not the same amount of help going on. Again, so this is just continuing Feinberg's list. The lines of specialization between medicine and public health, and here actually more than anywhere else, it's interesting to me that you can just see public health is almost geared more towards healthcare for the homeless than medicine is in a lot of ways. I mean, focusing, and actually I didn't highlight epidemiology, but I think that's really a critical issue when you're talking about, implementing, or at least informing the care decisions with, useful information, which doesn't happen enough. Focus on setting and population, substantive health problems. Nutritionists always just get hit hard when they come to the clinic because even at the free food that's given at the kitchen, it's high sodium, high fat, all of these things. And from their perspective, their minds are blown. They're like, what are we doing to these people? We're not helping them from how they conceive of these things. Let's see. Okay, and again, I promise this is the last one of these. The biological sciences are central to both, but it's driven by the major threats of the health population, and I think that's really relevant, again, in public health, for inside the clinic, and this is a sort of applied experience. What we're talking about is not each issue or the rash or the bacteria that's in the lung. It's we're talking about STIs, TB, asthma, diabetes, hypertension, foot care, it's one of my favorite subjects, mental illness, substance abuse, alcoholism, Recently, the topic of antibiotic resistance comes up a lot in the clinic, actually, which is obviously a huge deal and a really big issue for this field. If we keep wasting antibiotics on patients the way we do in this setting, even, and educating not just the patients but the students don't get a lot of this information for whatever reason, and so we're there to exchange with them too. Social sciences being integral as opposed to clinical. So what does it mean for public health to be in a clinic? I get that question. We get that question all the time. When we start explaining that we're, public health in a student-run clinic, people go, what do you even do? And there's a lot of different ways to answer it, but it's essentially, facilitating direct care with a population perspective. That's what we've come up with as an answer. It's care tailored to the social and cultural conditions, because that gets left out. You have to address the patient based on the resources they have and the means they have and the motivation they have to seek care, and readiness, stages of change and all that. And it's, it comes up a lot. Emphasis on underlying causes is another really big part. We want to know what got them homeless, because that's where we start. They start with a symptom. We start with, how'd you get here? Why'd you come in today? It's not about the rash. One story I always tell, and the students at the clinic are sick of me saying this because I say it at almost every orientation, but when a patient came in, it was like the third time I'd been in the clinic, he had a lung infection, was respiratory infection of some kind. All the students were sitting around talking about what kind of bacteria and what antibiotic to use so that they could treat the infection. I was like, well, sir, where do you sleep? Under a bridge. Right. So, that kind of hammered home, and everybody stopped. Well, we're going to treat this patient for a respiratory infection. They're going to go back and sleep under a bridge, breathing, all of these chemicals all night. We wonder how they're getting these infections. There was a quote from Herodotus that was given to me recently. Let's see if I've got that. Here, what was it again? That's fantastic. That's exactly what we're trying to talk about. Why are we just promoting the same issues over and over again instead of trying to stop this cycle? And that's a big part of what I'm going to say. The role of public health in a clinic is. To be fair, and I have to point this stuff out, public health in a clinic, the CDC recommendations obviously have to be mentioned. There's a lot of public health care recommendations for preventative care in particular. There's tons. Only about 50% get used, apparently, according to a survey that I found. And for acute care, it's about 70%, which is a little better. But 50% for preventative care. And I thought, well, that's terrible. What are we doing wrong about this? And then I looked it up. It would take about 7.4 hours a day per physician to implement all of those recommendations completely. I mean, that's, when you think about that, they wouldn't have any time to do what they do. They'd be so busy just running through the public health recommendations and educating about the care. And really the point I want to make with that is it doesn't necessarily need to be up to the physicians. We do want them to treat the whole patient, like it said in the criteria. I don't think that always happens, though. Patients don't always get treated like a whole person. But even if they can just keep that as their aim, I think that public health has a role in medical care that is being overlooked, because there's no way that these recommendations can be implemented fully. I mean, it's just not feasible. You see that there. This was, and those findings were taken from an article by, Joe Shaffrin, who writes for Healthcare Economist. It's a journal I really love. And he came up with his own list of public health versus medicine criteria. And I just want to highlight a few things, because I don't agree with all of it, and I'm going to highlight the ones that, I kind of have issue with. But some of it is pretty much the same thing. They say boss is a bureaucrat, and I don't think that's necessarily true. I also think, though, that it's not always true. I mean, mine's an emergency medicine physician, which is the opposite of a bureaucrat. I can't get him to sit still long enough. For the environment, though, I think that, first of all, he's got that way wrong. I mean, public health is in the field. It's at a desk. It's on a street corner, and it's in a clinic. And that's really what I think people need to start thinking more about. Public health is all about evaluation and outcomes. For this next one, to say it's vague, I thought that was funny, as opposed to I don't know why public health can't appreciate a positive patient outcome just the same, though. What's that? Oh, dear, I knew that was going to happen. Okay. You made that sign just for me, didn't you? Okay. The main thing, then, is just that bottom one. We need all of that information to do public health in a clinic. It's the risk and qualities, but it's also the patient history, et cetera. I am almost done. We can skip that, but somebody asked me one time what the difference between public health and public health medicine was. I want to say this, what we're not, and this is back to the applied issue with the clinic, and this is a slide straight out of our orientation for the public health students. We do have to tell people we're not clinical or diagnostic in any way, and we have to set a firm barrier there. It's not practice for a medical career. We have foreign medical graduates, residents, and pre-med students that want to come to the clinic, and you're not going to wear a white lab coat. I've told people to take them off, because what we want to do is identify with the patient at a closer level, and that we don't treat symptoms. We try and focus on the problems, and I think that's an important thing. I am wrapping. That's good. This is my last slide, actually, I realized. Just some of the things that we try to focus on: advocacy for the patient in the room, communication with the patient in a way that doesn't always happen during a medical encounter, and broadening that medical history so that all of the information we need gets brought in. Some of my references. I want to say thank you to a whole lot of people, obviously. Those are the names of former directors and leaders of the clinic and some of the co-authors, and the current director, Jennifer Torres, and Kara Chappell, the student representative, Dr. McCurdy over here, Dr. Buck, and Dr. Clark. And then I'm going to leave. I have to say, nobody sent me pictures. I had to go find these myself, which is why they look so candid. These were all from online or wherever I could find them, because nobody likes their picture taken. Okay, I'm done. Thank you. Oh, also.